This is Bloomberg Best.
Bloomberg Best is about the insight and the context that we get from our guests.
Top-notch, value-added, hot-off-the-presses news.
Bloomberg puts out thousands of news stories a day, but some really stick with you.
It's a great way to catch up on some of the stories you might have missed on the Bloomberg.
Stories you're not going to find in any other news organization.
Bloomberg Best. Bloomberg's best stories of the day, powered by 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries around the world.
I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm Denise Pellegrini, and on this weekend edition of Bloomberg Best.
I don't think monetary policy is going to take away that stock market volatility.
President of the Dallas Fed, Robert Kaplan.
We can meet at any time and move at any time.
St. Louis Fed President James Buller.
Rushing back into market after this kind of a swift, substantial decline is usually a mistake.
And Howard Ward of Gabelli on patience.
All this and more coming up in the next hour of Bloomberg Best.
All right, with market turbulence like what we had this past week, investors, Denise, are looking to the Fed to calm things down.
Yeah, they sure are, Ed. And Bloomberg's Kathleen Hayes had a chance to sit down with Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan and ask him all about it. Let's listen in.
The situation's changed pretty meaningfully over the last couple of weeks. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I was saying publicly, let's see how this unfolds and I'll make a judgment at the meeting. What happened once the virus got to South Korea and then to Italy, and it was clear there were diagnosed cases in the United States, for me at least, the probability of a deterioration in the U.S. economic outlook, the probability of that increased to the point where I came to the view we were going to need to take action at the FOMC meeting. And then I felt this situation is changing so rapidly that I thought it would be wiser, and I'll explain a little bit why, to act now and act boldly where it could make an impact. And here's what I mean by that. It's not going to help with, obviously, the number of diagnosed cases. It's not going to also get people to want to go out. It's not going to do anything about the containment reaction if the diagnosed cases spike. What it will do, though, is if we enter a period as a result of containment where we have a severe slowing in the economy that lasts for some period of time, accompanying that is likely to be a tightening in financial conditions. And what monetary policy can do is if we go into this with somewhat easier conditions, I thought, and I still believe, it will help to moderate or mitigate some of that inevitable tightening of financial conditions that will happen as a result of this spike in cases and the containment. And so the judgment about the wisdom of this is more looking ahead to what's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks, not what's going on right now. And in that regard, I feel as confident today that we did the right thing as I did on Tuesday. And I'll say one other thing.
Okay.
A number of people had a reaction because the market on the day we did it sold off. And I will tell you, if the market had gone up that day, that would have given me no comfort whatsoever that we made the right decision. And by it selling off, it didn't make me feel that it wasn't the right decision. This is not about conditions now. It's not about the current stock market. It's about mitigating a tightening of financial conditions that will likely happen some number of weeks from now and increasing the likelihood that as we come out of this situation, we can come out more strongly.
Okay. Well, speaking of the stock market, if you're looking at financial conditions and you're looking at maintaining financial stability, does this up the ante again for more rate cuts? Does it say, well, you didn't do quite enough, you know, so maybe it's time to do a little more?
So let me just put this in context. We started this whole situation in January with a U.S. equity market that was historically highly elevated. Enterprise value, stock market cap to GDP were at 50-year highs. So it was probably inevitable that there might be some retracement and sell-off. Then the virus hit, and obviously you got a sell-off down to the level we're at now. But even at the level we closed at today, we're still at relatively elevated levels by historical standards, but we also have a lot more variation in expectations for corporate earnings. When you have that kind of uncertainty, you're going to have a lot of volatility. So I would just say I'm expecting this volatility to continue. Okay. We're going to have up days. We're going to have down days. That's not what I'm referring to when I'm talking about financial conditions. And I don't think monetary policy is going to take away that stock market volatility. I think we should just expect it. What I'm looking at is cost and availability of credit and widening, potential widening of credit spreads and availability of capital as businesses have less business and need to manage through this. That's the thing I'm watching.
It's six times since 1998, I'm reading this because I want to get it right, the Fed has cut rates between its regular meetings.
Yeah.
And each time it's cut its key rate at the next meeting. We know markets are pricing in a move on March 18th. And that was another reason, like, why didn't they wait? Why the urgency? But is it possible? What will you have to see to say, put the stock market to one side, we're going to cut again on March 18th?
So at this point, I will say it's too soon to judge, and I wouldn't presume what we're going to do in the March meeting. But I will say this, I'm going to be watching very, very carefully the path of diagnosed cases.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be influencing my views on what the likely path is of containment response and the U.S. economy. And I'll be factoring that in as we go into the March meeting. But as I sit here now, I'll make a judgment in that meeting. I don't want to speculate publicly, but I wouldn't presume on what we're going to do in the March meeting.
So if the number of diagnosed cases accelerates, that would be a factor mm-hmm. that you and your fellow FOMC colleagues would look at and say, well, it's accelerating. People are going to be more worried, so maybe we better go ahead and do another dose of what insurance or looking at financial conditions or just trying to keep things in a position where they're stable.
So even before this, I was expecting that once we get a cluster of cases, that it's likely to increase. And so we're just going to have to see what the actual developments are.
That was Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan with Bloomberg's Global Economics and Policy Editor Kathleen Hayes.
And coming up, we'll hear more from Kaplan.
You're listening to Bloomberg Best. This is Bloomberg Best. I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm Denise Pellegrini.
Denise, it's just been an extraordinary week for investors.
Yeah, Ed. And, you know, the uncertainty has a lot of investors wondering how much, you know, the Fed can do to help. And for more, I want to go back to Bloomberg's Global Economics and Policy Editor Kathleen Hayes with Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan.
Normal economic data that we're used to relying on, I will just say, for me, is not very useful. The economic data is going to look pretty good. It doesn't, but monetary policy has to be forward-looking. What we did this Tuesday, for me, was looking out ahead over the next few months and further out through the year. And conversations with contacts and companies, which I'm doing extensively right now, I always do extensively, but I've ramped them up even more, are critical. And monitoring events as they unfold from here and understand how companies are reacting to those and how consumers might react, that's what I'm spending my time on.
Well, in fact, you anticipated one of my next questions, because you have this very large network of contacts in
yeah.
the business world, not just because you're a Dallas Fed president for so many years now, but, you know, you were the former vice chair of Goldman, you taught at the Harvard Business School, so you have links and conversations with many people all the time. What are you hearing from people?
So here's what companies are saying to me. It depends on the industry, but I talk to a wide range of CEOs across industries. First of all, what they're saying is they've already come to grips to some extent with the supply aspects of this, meaning a number of companies are exposed to getting supply from China. Interestingly, it's not as extensive as from Mexico. It's more individualistic by industry. But what they're telling me is in the fall, a number of them were anticipating a danger of escalation in the trade dispute with China. So a number of them took steps in the fall to maybe get more supply, thinking that we might be in a more severe trade war. So that may help a number of these companies to have a little longer time before they have severe supply disruptions. If it was just supply for most of these companies, I think they could get their arms around the impact. What they're doing now is trying to determine the demand impact. How is it likely to affect their customers? Which businesses are they in that are likely to be affected? And that's what they and their teams are intensively going through right now. For a number of companies, it may be moderate. For others, it's going to be more significant. But that's what companies are trying to come to grips with. And it's the demand, it's that second demand effect, and also the local supply effect. So if a company can't have people at their business or in their factory, it obviously will affect. But they're trying to come to grips with the domestic effects, particularly the demand effect, And that's what they're working on right now. And the truth is, they'd be the first to admit, they're not sure. There's a lot of uncertainty, but they're taking steps to prepare for it. And I think they're handling this in a very appropriate way.
What are you hearing about supply chains? There's so much written about it, that they're broken in China or maybe broken, or this seems to be the one of the things people are definitely worried about.
Yeah, so a number of companies that do have supply chains in China, what they're trying to determine, the Chinese had a spike in cases. It reached a level, it appears, if you believe the data, to be moderating somewhat. And what they're telling me, the Chinese are now trying to make a judgment. Do we send people back into the factories? Do we go back to work? And they're trying to judge that because they don't want to create another spike in cases. And so we'll have pretty good information on that over the next number of weeks. And so a number of companies are hopeful that some of the supply outages with China can be addressed. And again, I would just emphasize, there's supply chains with China. They are far more significant, as you heard from me before, with Mexico. And so I think for most companies I talk to, while this is a challenge, I think they've tell me this is manageable.
Okay. You know, you mentioned how the traditional macro indicators that we watch so closely, the Fed watches, they don't serve us right now because things can change so quickly. But I still have to ask you, have you revised down your forecast? I mean, think about it, on March 18th. You revise the SEPs, the summary of economic projections, dot plots. I mean, how can you even do dot plots right now?
So I guess what I'd say is, going into this situation, if you'd asked me in January what our forecast was for the year, I thought the U.S. economy could grow at 2.25% or more, mainly because we thought global growth would stabilize, manufacturing would stabilize from last year, and business fixed investment wouldn't be great, but would stabilize, and the consumer would be strong. So what I would say is, we're now going to have an interruption where we're going to have a severe deterioration, I think is likely, and it may last a quarter, it may last a quarter and a half. We don't know the magnitude and the duration. But I also know the U.S. economy has the potential to grow at around 2% as we come out of this. And so I think for most companies, it's not the downturn that they're focused on. They're looking then over the horizon, how quickly do we come out of it, and can we get back to growing at 2.25%? I think we can, but it is one of the main reasons why I felt it was appropriate that we take action this week, and why we're very carefully monitoring the situation. Monetary policy isn't the lead policy option in this situation. We need good healthcare policies, containment policies. It's possible fiscal policy will play a role. There may be forbearance policies from a supervisory point of view, I think, will be appropriate. But that's not to say that monetary policy isn't a piece of the puzzle. It is, and it has a role to play. And I think it can help mitigate and moderate our coming out of this after we get through this downturn.
And you will do dots anyway? You're still going to put them out?
We will do dots.
Boy, oh boy. I guess they may look a bit different than they looked at the last meeting.
They may look different.
Okay. What does the coronavirus mean for inflation? Does it mean, well, there's a supply side shock and a shortage of inputs, so we're going to see more inflation? Or does it mean people are staying home and not shopping and demand ebbs, and so we have even lower inflation, farther from the 2% target, which I suppose the Fed isn't quite so worried about now with the virus all around us?
So there'll be conflicting effects. One of the effects for certain items where their supply chains are disrupted and they're not good substitutes, you could see price inflation on those items. But it's likely to be transitory. On the other hand, if there's less demand and there's more slack in the economy, you could see that having a downward effect on prices. For me, looking over the horizon, still the big trend in the economy is technology and technology-enabled disruption, and overall businesses are limited in their pricing power because of the ability for consumers to use technology to push back. I think whatever happens for a quarter and a half, I think probably monetary policy should be careful about reacting to. I'm looking for more sustainable effects, and over the horizon, what's the more structural drivers for inflation?
That was Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan with Bloomberg's Global Economics and Policy Editor, Kathleen Hayes.
And coming up, we will hear from St. Louis Fed President James Bullard.
You're listening to Bloomberg Best.
You're listening to Bloomberg Best on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm Denise Pellegrini.
Denise, with interest rates so low, you might wonder how much dry powder the Fed really has.
Yeah, that's right, Ed. We're not the only ones wondering about that, clearly. And that is actually one thing that Bloomberg's Alex Steele and Michael McKee had a chance to ask St. Louis Fed President James Bullard about. Take a listen.
Obviously, there's a lot of volatility in markets. Not surprising. Everyone's trying to get a handle on how to price trillions of dollars of stuff all around the world. And I think we're all struggling to try to understand what the effects of the coronavirus are. And so I wouldn't, I'm not surprised by volatility in markets in that kind of situation.
Well, if you, as Jay Powell said, cut to help restore confidence, not to be rude, but it looks like you failed. Is there anything you can do to, anything the Fed, a central bank can do to save these people out there?
No, I think we correctly positioned the policy rate, given what we knew as of the Monday-Tuesday time frame. And everything's on the table. We're willing to do more, but we're monitoring the situation. We can meet at any time and move at any time in this kind of situation. I feel like we're playing this exactly as we should. There's downside risk to growth. We'll see how it plays out. Kind of seems like the market's pricing in the very worst case. Yes. Okay, but we'll take that on board, and we'll go forward and monitor this day by day.
Have you ever had less visibility on an economic outcome than you do right now?
I think there are times of uncertainty that you can point to in the past that are similar to this. We have had viruses in the past, H1N1, H7N9, SARS, Ebola. So there are precedents, and I would prefer to stick to those precedents for this case and not make the jump over to other types of crises that we've gone through in the past.
We had the Beige Book this week, too, that started to show signs of supply chain issues.
I think the Beige Book mentioned coronavirus 48 times or
right.
something.
Right, and I can assume that...
And it hadn't even hit yet.
I know, I was going to say, next month's going to be even worse, like triple that. And I wonder, since that survey was taken, like, have you heard more from your constituents of like what they're seeing and hearing?
Yes, I have. I hear every day. And I would say, though, that most businesses are more savvy than what's being portrayed. Most of them have business plans that can handle disruption. Most of them have ideas about what they would do if a lot of employees get sick and things like that. So they're kind of cautiously optimistic. I mean, everyone's nervous all around the world, but it's not like they haven't thought about this. They have. Most businesses have thought about it.
Well, is there going to be a funding problem out there? About half of the corporate bonds in the United States are triple Bs. If they start falling, we've got a problem.
We're monitoring this kind of effect. We're not really seeing anything so far, but we'll keep a close eye on this and watch this going forward. Again, I think even those that are borrowing at those kind of yields are stress testing their businesses and thinking about how they're going to survive a temporary slowdown. I mean, I think you have to think that this is going to be temporary.
Do you?
I mean.
But is it temporary with like a U, an L, or
yeah,
a V?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. But you're talking about a temporary slowdown in growth. I do think the situation in China, looks like it's stabilizing, looks like it's getting better. And if I know the Chinese, they'll also put stimulus in place and they'll come roaring back in the second quarter. I don't think they're quite there yet. They're not quite around the corner. But that is then a template for how all the other countries will go through a temporary slowdown and then be able to rebound and come back. So I also think the healthcare response in the U.S., is probably better than what's being portrayed, because I think you can't just talk about one thing as a healthcare response. There's a federal response, there's state level responses, there's corporate level responses, there's individuals taking action, and it's the whole web of things that is the response to the crisis. So It's not quite as visible as some, you know, somebody waving a wand or taking one particular step somewhere. I was encouraged also to see that Hong Kong, I don't know if you saw this article, but Hong Kong's ordinary flu season ended early because they had taken so many steps to combat coronavirus that the other types of work disruptions that would come from more normal infections went away. So there's a little bit of a silver lining in an environment where you've got everybody thinking health, everybody washing their hands all the time, everybody concerned about this spread of this disease.
St. Louis Fed President James Bullard with Bloomberg's Michael McKee and Alex Steele.
And coming up, Ed, a look at pandemic preparations last year and what we might actually be able to learn from it.
Plus, is it time to jump back into stocks?
You're listening to Bloomberg Best.
When you shop Goodwill, you don't just bring home a vintage dress or cat lamp. You bring home so much good to your community because everything you buy funds local job training and more. Goodwill, bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
This is Bloomberg Best. I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm Denise Pellegrini. You know, Ed, as the coronavirus outbreak spreads, health officials, they're really scrambling to contain the fallout. And that is sparking quarantines, of course, and other emergency action around the world.
And believe it or not, Denise, it's a scenario that's been planned for. For example, in just one case, just months ago, at a gathering of leaders in global finance, policy, and healthcare. Bloomberg's Janet Wu has more.
The date was October 18th. International business, government, and public health leaders gathered at the Pierre Hotel in New York. Their goal that day was to simulate a coordinated response to a hypothetical but scientifically plausible global viral outbreak.
We're at the start of what's looking like it will be a severe pandemic.
Simulated news reports describe a virus that emerged in a small farm in South America that jumped from sick animals to farmers.
It began in healthy-looking pigs. A new coronavirus spread silently within herds.
This simulation is a joint exercise between the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
The sickest required intensive care. Many died.
We have to be prepared for all pandemics, and the possibility of a rapidly moving airborne pandemic is one that we really particularly have to get ready for, because it'll probably be in several countries before we even know it.
Chris Elias is president of global development for the Gates Foundation. He leads the effort to deliver healthcare products and solutions to those who need them most.
I met Bill Gates not long ago, and he described this before the New England Journal of Medicine as one of his worst nightmares.
What could kill 10 million people today? You know, nuclear war, an asteroid, and a pandemic.
Looking at history, health experts know the world is always at risk for a pandemic to emerge again.
In the 20th century, we had three big pandemics of influenza. The biggest one in 1918 killed more people than both World War I and World War II put together. And 100 years later, we're in an even more interconnected world.
And that's the real fear here. Advances have made the world smaller and therefore more vulnerable to communicable disease. We're seeing international travel spread this new coronavirus from China to other countries in Asia, Europe, the Middle East, and North and South America. That concern is what prompted this 3.5-hour exercise back in October to put a spotlight on important gaps in preparation for a pandemic and create solutions to fill those gaps.
It's not easy gathering all of these business executives together in one place to do this, but these games, for lack of a better word, are important.
You know, you can write and read about the best practices, but when you simulate with actual breaking news and alerts coming in, you get people to think what they might do if they really faced it. It's really thinking through, how would we manage our supply chain? How would we communicate across regions about this outbreak?
That's what brought the business and policy leaders to the Pierre Hotel more than 4 months ago to simulate a response to a fictitious global health crisis. As the morning progressed, the scenario turned stark.
We could be looking at double the number of cases in 1 week and 16 times as many in a month. In 3 months, we could be approaching 10 million cases.
In this simulation, the virus spreads from South America to North America, then to Europe, as passengers board planes unaware they're infected.
International travel has turned local epidemics into a pandemic.
Participants in this exercise include Martin Knuschel, head of crisis and emergency management for the German airline group Lufthansa.
That's the risk we are facing, and we are aware of this. We will be the first one to hit it, and we will spread it around.
Also taking part in this simulation, Latoya Abbott, crisis and occupational health director for Marriott International.
It would be one of our worst nightmares, but one thing about Marriott, we are very into and on top of business continuity, making sure our crisis plans are always together.
She's joined by C-suite executives from global companies including UPS, healthcare companies like Johnson & Johnson, lead health officials from China and Nigeria, plus representatives from the United Nations, the Centers for Disease Control, and the World Bank. And of course, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, which created this scenario. I spoke with director Tom Inglesby.
These are the kinds of exercises that Bill Gates has called germ games. The idea is for people to try and imagine themselves in the story, to feel the full consequences of it, to get experiential learning. That's the goal.
The World Health Organization responds to roughly 200 epidemics a year. This simulation was dubbed Event 201, named for a hypothetical 201st outbreak that could be the catastrophic one.
We've had some near misses, such as the SARS virus in the early 2000s, which spread to multiple countries around the world with a high case fatality rate. We have viruses in the world that now have a case fatality rate of 50%. They kill one in two people they infect. So we have to be better prepared, and we have to have global systems in place to be able to take care of people, to ensure travel and trade doesn't collapse, to try and avoid the worst economic consequences.
In this simulated exercise from October, they play out the very worst case scenario.
People are avoiding public spaces out of fear of infection. This has had a dramatic effect.
The spread of misinformation via social media is another new risk not seen in earlier 20th century pandemics, and it can have a devastating impact. Ryan Morhard leads global health security for the World Economic Forum.
A large chunk of the economic impact that we see doesn't come from the virus itself. It comes from the way we react to it. And that's actually reason for optimism. There are things that we can do to reduce economic impact and reduce impact on lives and livelihoods.
Participants in this exercise are asked to respond to the fictitious pandemic in a variety of ways. Business leaders must protect their workforce and manage financial fallout. Government officials must deploy dollars and resources, while health officials support national and international efforts. In this simulation, the outcome turns disastrous.
The outcome of the CAPS pandemic in Event 201 was catastrophic. 65 million people died in the first 18 months. Cases were occurring in nearly every country. The global economy was in a free fall. Economists say the economic turmoil caused by such a pandemic will last for years, perhaps a decade. We have to ask, are there things we could have done that would have lessened the catastrophic consequences?
In this exercise from October, and in nearly all cases, the answer is yes, according to the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security Director, Tom Inglesby.
We've had pandemics in the past. We absolutely will have them again. Every global health expert agrees on that. So now is the time to prepare for this.
Most health experts expect a far milder fallout from the current coronavirus. The mortality rate is much lower than the SARS outbreak of 17 years ago, though this virus appears to spread more easily. Still, simulations like this one from late last year and the fight against the current outbreak are a stark reminder of the damage that's possible from a truly global pandemic. I'm Janet Wu, Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you, Janet.
And Denise, the coronavirus really infected Wall Street again this week, and that has some investors trying to time the market.
Yes, it does. And Bloomberg's Tom Keene, host of Bloomberg Surveillance, asked Howard Ward of Gabelli Funds all about it. Specifically, he asked him when it might be time to deploy cash if you're feeling brave and jump back in. Let's take a listen.
This market has had a lot of technical destruction. Typically, when you have this much damage done to the market, it takes a while for it to recover. And I'm talking period of weeks, if not months, before you get a real recovery. The problem right now is in trying to value stocks, there's tremendous uncertainty as to what the earnings level will be. We went into this year with the street looking for $175 of earnings for the S&P. You're seeing that number cut now. Some people are back at flat earnings of $165 for this year. You put a 17 multiple on that, you'd be at 2,800 on the S&P. If this virus continues to grow and spread, as I believe it will, those numbers will go down. If you have negative earnings in a period with falling PMIs and widening credit spreads, falling PE multiples, stocks could actually, you know, be down 20%. You'd be at 15 times $160 earnings. That'd be 2,400 on the S&P, down 20%. That's probably not your base case. But your base case, I think, is probably lower. I don't see the upside to jumping into the market right now. It's been my experience in 42 years on Wall Street that rushing back into market after this kind of a swift, substantial decline is usually a mistake. Having said that, if you're a long-term investor, and I mean long-term and committed to stocks, you can begin to layer your money into the market now.
Howard Ward, is dividend growth an alternative to yield right now? Can you rationalize layering in based off the stream that you'll get along the way, along the turmoil of the virus?
I think you can, but I think you have to take the context that this is the bottom of the first inning for this virus in this country. This is going to get substantially worse, and I'm not meaning to spread panic. I'm just saying if you listen to the experts on infectious diseases, this is extremely early innings, and business travel is being curtailed. Companies are canceling events. We've canceled an event for next month in New York for about 100 people. We have an event in April for about 600 people. We may have to cancel that. I'm on the board of a charity called HeartCare International. We canceled a trip for about 30 doctors to Mexico who were going to do emergency surgery on children for two reasons. Fear that they wouldn't be able to get back into this country, and also because in the hospital where they would be operating, there's already a case of the virus. And so things are shutting down, schools which are now being closed. So it's early innings. I would be patient. Patience, I think, is a virtue right now.
And that was Howard Ward, CIO at Gabelli Funds, with Bloomberg's Tom Keene.
And that's it for this hour of Bloomberg Best. I'm Ed Baxter.
And I'm Denise Pellegrini. This is Bloomberg.